having deviated last week for Parshas Shkalim. So this week the Haftarah for Truma is 11:57 in the back of the Stone of Chumashim, and it's taken from Sefer Melachim Aleph, the first book of Kings. Just as we'll preface before we start the actual text of the Haftarah, sometimes we have to struggle a little bit to find the connection between the Sedra and the Haftarah. In this case, there's not too much of a struggle. The Sedra is all about the building of the Mishkan. The Haftarah is all about the building of the Beis HaMikdash through the hands of Shlomo HaMelech. Right? So that's the very obvious connection. We don't have to stand on our heads to try to figure out what the connection is. Having said that, pointed out the very obvious connection, when we get into the text of Sefer Melachim Aleph, which actually describes it, as Robertson Heffler says, we'll see the very glaring differences between the building of the Mishkan on the one hand and the building of the Beis HaMikdash as described in the Haftarah on the other hand. Says the Pasuk, we start with the last couple of Pesukim of Perek Hei. Hashem nosan chokhma l'shlomo kasher diber lo. God had given wisdom to Shlomo just as he had told him. Remember the story is that Shlomo HaMelech, right after his father David dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him and says, what would you like? I can give you riches, I can give you glory. And basically Shlomo says, I like wisdom. Right? Yeah. And that's what happens. Shlomo HaMelech becomes the Chacham Mikol Adam, becomes the wisest of all men. So God indeed granted Chachma, he granted wisdom to Shlomo, Kasher Diber Lo, just as he had told him. Vayhi Shalom ben Chiram ben Shlomo. There was a covenant of peace between Chiram, the king of Tsur in modern-day Lebanon, and between Shlomo, Vayichrasu v'ris Shneihem, the two of them entered into a peace treaty together. And we'll see, not in this Haftarah, but later on in, a little bit in this Haftarah also, both in this Haftarah and later on in Sefer Melachim, that Chiram is a tremendous ally in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So Pasuk goes on to say, Vayal HaMelech Shlomo mas mikol Yisrael. Shlomo HaMelech levied a tax against the entire Jewish people. What was the tax? By Yamas, Shloshim Elef Ish, 30,000 people. This is not a tax of money, as the Mefarshim explain, but rather a tax of labor. Basically, he creates a labor force of 30,000, basically regular balabatim from Klal Yisrael, who are now going to be pressed into the service of building the Beis HaMikdash. Every Rav wishes that they had such powers to be able to muster up 30,000 people, to come and work on behalf of shul projects. Maybe sometimes you get three people sometimes. Yeah. So how did it work with these 30,000 people? So Vayishlochem Livonona. So because all of the cedars, all the cedars from which the beautiful wood came, that was the paneling of the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to see that later on in the Haftarah. All of the wood for the paneling came from Lebanon, from the country that Chiram ruled over, right? So again, it's essential. The Pasuk tells us that there was a peace treaty between Shlomo and Chiram. If there wasn't a peace treaty, right? Imagine nowadays, sending people to Lebanon to start cutting down trees for a project back in Eretz Yisrael, right? That probably wouldn't play so well in the papers, right? But then there was a peace treaty between Shlomo HaMelech and Chiram Melech Tsar. So Shlomo HaMelech sent these 30,000 people to Lebanon. Aseres alofim b'chodesh chalifos. They worked in shifts of 10,000 per month. Chodesh iyu valavonon, shnaim chodoshim b'veso. Right? And they basically worked as follows. They were sent up to Lebanon for a month at a time. Then the next 2 months, those shifts would go back. And because the shifts were divided, 30,000 people were divided into three shifts, basically every 3 months, these 10,000 of these 30,000 people spent a month in Lebanon working with the cedar trees. Some of the Mefarshim talk about, by the way, it's not exactly clear what kind of work they were doing. Obviously, part of it was lumberjack work. They were cutting down the trees. But the Mefarshim say a lot of these people were not only engaged in cutting down the trees, but they were artisans. They were working with shaping and forming the cut down trees to make them into the kind of wood which would then be suitable for the Beis HaMikdash, right? So there was both unskilled labor and skilled labor, which was utilized in the building of the Beis HaMikdash in these particular shifts where the people were sent to Lebanon. Va'adon Iram al Hamas. And since, shockingly, not everyone wanted to go to Lebanon for a month, right, out of these 30,000 people. So Shlomo HaMelech had to put somebody in charge, an individual by the name of Adoniram, who was in charge to basically supervise and enforce this labor to make sure that everyone would report to duty when they were supposed to. In addition to those 30,000 people, Vayihi Shlomo 70,000 nosei sabol. Shlomo HaMelech had 70,000 schleppers, right, who would carry things. Ushmonim elef chotzev bahar, and 80,000 quarriers, right, who would quarry the stone from the mountain, right. So 30,000 plus 70,000 plus 80,000, right, 180,000 people basically working on the Beis Hamikdash. Levad, that doesn't even include, says the pasuk, misari hanitzavim l'shlomo, the officers, the standing officers that Shlomo HaMelech had. In other words, the people who were normally in his employment, not simply, these people were pressed into service specifically for the work on the Beis HaMikdash, but Shlomo HaMelech had individuals who normally worked for him, his regular officers, Ashal HaMelecha, and they supervised all of this work. They constituted Shloshes Alafim Ushlosh Meos, right? 3,300 people, regular officers of Shlomo HaMelech, their job was Harodim Ba'am Ha'osim Ba'malacha. They were the supervisors, and they basically made sure that these other, you know, 180,000 people did what they were supposed to be doing. That's a massive, massive workforce which was put to work building the Beis HaMikdash.
It's a strong word, Harodim.
Yeah.
It's not just Muslim.
Right. Because they made sure that it got done. Right. They made sure that it got done. By Yitzhav HaMelech, the king commanded, Vayasiu avonim gidolos, avonim yekoros, liyaseid haboyes, avne gozis. The king gave the command, and they moved heavy stones, precious stones, in order to be the foundation of the Beis HaMikdash, stones that were hewn out of the mountain. Vayivsalu bonei Shlomo uvonei Chiron v'hagivlim. So there were three groups of people who are now working on these stones, the builders that Shlomo HaMelech had, the builders of Chiram, right? In other words, part of the peace treaty apparently had with Chiram was Chiram sent his own men down to Shlomo HaMelech to help build the Beis HaMikdash, right? Which gives you a sense of the very close relations they had. You know, he basically took these foreign workers to help with the work. Vahagivlim, and men from the country of Givol. Givol was another country which bordered on Eretz Yisrael. Apparently, the Givlim, the people from Givol, were known for being particularly skilled with doing work with stones. So these three groups of people worked with the stones, Vayochinu Ha'etzim V'Havonim Livnos Ha'boyis. And these three groups of people, these professionals, prepared the wood and the stones for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Now it's interesting, we'll have to come back to this. These psukim, how many psukim did we have? Seven psukim altogether from the end of Perek Hay are really introductory psukim to the building of the Mikdash. The actual building of the Mikdash itself is described from here on in till the end of the Haftarah with Perek Vav, starting with Perek Vav in the Navi, how it describes how Shlomo HaMelech began to actually build the Beis HaMikdash. We'll have to try to figure out what the significance of talking about the massive amounts of people.
It's really very parallel,
yeah,
to the Parsha.
Right, first the collection.
And it talks about the preparation.
So first you have the preparation of the parsha also, and then, so in that sense, right, 100%, the Haftarah is really parallel on the parsha, in terms of talking about not only the building, but also the preparation. Vayihi bishmonim shana, v'arba meos shana, l'tseis b'nei Yisrael me'aretz Mitzrayim. So it came to pass 480 years after the Jews have left Mitzrayim. So we pointed out in previous shiurim, this is a very unusual way to date an activity. Right? This activity took place 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. I mean, by that token, we could talk about how the Mikvah Malav HaMalka this year will be taking place 351 years after the Jews arrived in America, which is true, right? But it wouldn't be the dating system offhand that we would think of, you know, to indicate when the Mikvah Malav HaMalka is taking place. Usually, events are dated to the reign of a king, you know, to some recent historical event. Why date the building of the Mikdash back to Yetzias Mitzrayim? So we pointed out that seemingly the point of the pasuk is to indicate that Yetzias Mitzrayim is not complete until the Beis HaMikdash has been built. The whole tachlis, the whole purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim was not simply freedom in the physical sense of the term, but the spiritual fulfillment which comes with coming to Eretz Yisrael, and ultimately with the Shekhinah dwelling in Klal Yisrael, which is only really fulfilled to the fullest extent through the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's not just by accident, it's not just, you know, some arbitrary date, but the 480 years represents the culmination of Yetzias Mitzrayim. As I quote in previous shiurim from my Rebbe, Rav Meir Twersky Shlita, who noted that in addition to this pasuk, the Dayenu, which we sing on the night of the Seder, starts Hotzianu Mitzrayim, and Banalonu es Beis HaBechira L'chapir HaKol Avanoseinu. The song ends up with the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So it very nicely frames, that's basically the timeline of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is over when the Ribbono Shel Olam builds us the Beis HaBechira, builds us the Beis HaMikdash. That's the culmination of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, not simply when the Jews leave Egypt, not even when they get the Torah, but when they come to Eretz Yisrael and build the Beis HaMikdash. That's the final chapter, so to speak, in the saga of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right. Okay, so it happened 480 years after the Exodus. Bashana HaRevius, in the fourth year of Shlomo HaMelech's reign, Bachodesh Ziv, Huachodesh Hasheni, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, in other words, if you count the months from Nisan, right, so then Iyar is the second month. Chazal point out that Ziv means splendor, right, Rabbi Sif, actually, right, Rabbi Sif's name in Hebrew is actually Ziv. The Sif is an Anglicization of Ziv. He spells it in Hebrew Zion Yud Vav, just like the month, right? So where does that come from? So Chazal explained that as the flowers begin to bud, they produce their splendor during the month of Iyar, which more or less corresponds to the month of May, right? As the flowers and everything, spring is coming out. So it's, again, just in a very simple sense, it's not surprising that the building of the Beis HaMikdash starts in spring. You certainly don't want to start a major construction project during the winter, right? So they waited to the spring. You know, that's when they were going to start the building of the Beis HaMikdash. L'noch Shlomo al Yisrael, it was the fourth year of Shlomo HaMelech's reign over Klal Yisrael. Va'iver Habayis L'Hashem, they began to build the Beis HaMikdash to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'Habayis Asher Bona HaMelech Shlomo L'Hashem. So we go on, the Navi goes on to describe some of the actual dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash. The house which Shlomo HaMelech built to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shishim Amo Orko, it was 60 amos long, the Esrim Rochbo, and 20 amos wide, Ushloshim Amo Komoso, and 30 amos high. Now an amo is somewhere between a foot and a half and 2 feet. Right, so let's, you know, just for the purposes of simplicity over here, let's assume the bigger measurement, that we're talking about 2 feet for each amo. So just basically take each of the dimensions here and double them. The Beis HaMikdash was a very, very impressive building. It was 120 feet long, 40 feet wide, and 60 feet high. Right? So we're talking about something which, as we'll see, basically had, was at least, it depends how you figure out what a story is, but it's at least 3 stories high, right? And possibly bigger than that, depending on how big we're going to judge each story to be. Right? In contemporary terms, generally nowadays each story I think is about 10 feet, a typical apartment building, from floor to ceiling on a typical floor. So if we're going to assume the bigger measurements, that the Beis HaMikdash was basically 60 feet high, so we're talking about something that was roughly the size of the Amalgamated, right, in terms of height, right, maybe a little bit smaller than the Amalgamated, right? just to give a picture of what it looked like. Now
the Amalgamated, I think, has 6 floors.
Right, so if you assume each floor is probably about 10 feet high,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
right? Right, okay, so I mean, let's assume it's maybe a little bit shorter, about the same height, maybe a little bit shorter than the Amalgamated, 504. Right, so...
But there's only one story.
Right, well, yeah, we'll so there actually were 3 stories in part of it, but we'll see that in a little bit, Bezus Hashem.
They didn't have an elevator, did
they? They had a nice staircase. We'll see that actually in the Haftarah. You may say, okay, so it's as big as the Amalgamated, but Hillman's River, it's much bigger than that. But you have to remember, they didn't have 20-story buildings, right? I mean, so for the time, right, a 60-foot building is very impressive. Remember also, it's on top of the Har HaBayis, on top of the mountain. Right. So in other words, it's a very impressive building that everyone can see from all around. So we'll get to the floors in a minute. We'll see the floor plan. That's going to be the Haftarah. Okay, so that's just to give us a rough picture of the dimensions. V'ha'ulam al pnei heichal habayis. There were two chambers, two major parts, two major rooms in the interior of the Beis HaMikdash itself. It was first what's called the ulam. Modern-day Hebrew ulam is an auditorium, and it more or less served that function in the Beis HaMikdash as well. You first came in. You didn't come straight in. When you entered the Beis HaMikdash, you didn't come in to the inner chamber right away. You first came to this auditorium, a vestibule of sorts.
Like a poorhouse.
Yeah, right. You know, an entrance, what do they call it? Not a vestibule, but...
A foyer.
A foyer, right. It's a sort of a foyer, a large foyer, right? An auditorium-style foyer. So there's first an ulam, and then in the interior, past the ulam, is what's referred to as the heichal. The heichal is not the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? The Kodesh HaKadoshim is actually referred to as the Dvir, right? The innermost area. The Heichal refers to what we call the Kodesh, i.e. the place where the Mizbeach HaKtaras was, the golden Mizbeach where the incense was offered up on, where the menorah was, and where the Shulchan with the Lechem Aponim was, right? So there's the Ulam, the antechamber, you know, the auditorium. Then you came a little bit further into the Heichal, which was where the menorah, the Shulchan, and the Mizbeach HaKtaras, you know, the famous Kalim, which we're going to read about in this week's parasha, are described, right? V'ha'ulam al pnei heichal abayis. So says the pasuk, the ulam preceded the heichal, right? You came into the ulam first. Esrim ama orko al pnei rochav habayis. The ulam was 20 amos in length, up against it ran the width of the bayis. Eser bo amo rochbo al pnei habayis. But it was 10 amos in width in front of the bayis. In other words, the ulam was skinnier than the width of the Beis HaMikdash itself. And when he came into the ulam was a skinnier room, and then it opened up into the heichal, which was a wider or broader room. Right, it was to give you the impression of greater splendor as you came in, when you came into a narrower area, foyer area, that then opened up afterwards. So it opened up basically to a room that was twice as wide as the initial room. You came in, the initial room was 10 amos across, again, 20, let's say about 20 feet in width. And it opened up into the Heichal, a bigger room, which was then 20 amos, in other words, 40 feet across. So again, you had this sense of expansiveness of coming in to a gradually expanding area as you got closer and closer.
And the side, the Lishkot?
So we'll talk about the sides in a minute. That's going to be, right? Just to give us a sense, the Beis HaMikdash ultimately, not Shlomo's Beis HaMikdash, but the Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, opens up to the west. Right? So the Kodesh HaKadosh was in the western area, and you basically went from east to west, traveling through the Ulam, then into the Heichal, then into the Kodesh HaKadosh as you went west. In Shlomo HaMelech's Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash was actually reversed, it faced east. Right? But the Bayis HaSheni was facing west. Now, Bayas LaBayis, Pasuk Dalet, he made for the house Chalone Shkufim Atumim. Very interesting Pasuk. He made for the house windows, Shkufim, like from the word Lehashkif, that you could see through,
inside, you could see,
right? Atumim that were closed.
Yeah. What we have to do today, we have that.
Yeah.
Ours, you can see out, but you can see in.
Right. See,
it's so it's right. Not something new.
Right. Oh, yeah?
So it isn't something new. That's for the men. See the men, but the men can't see us.
Oh, so right. So it's a very interesting passage. The shkufim atumim, right? The windows were see through but closed. So Rashi brings from Chazal that, as Rebbe Sinhefler described, the windows were made in a very very interesting fashion. The windows were made in such a way so that they broadened as you looked out. So in other words, they narrowed as you looked out, basically. So in other words, the idea that was supposed to be conveyed was that the light did not have to penetrate in to the Beis HaMikdash, but rather the light from the Beis HaMikdash was going out to the rest of the world. It wasn't necessary to be able to see, to allow the light to penetrate into the Mikdash, the idea was that the light from the interior of the Mikdash would light up the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need natural light. The light of the Beis HaMikdash and everything it represented would be spread around the entire world. Vayiven Al-Kir HaBayis Yotzia Saviv Eskiros HaBayis Saviv LaHeichol V'LaDvir. What Shlomo HaMelech also made, in addition to building the interior of the Heichol and the Dvir, was that all around the Beis HaMikdash, the walls of the Beis HaMikdash contained a yotzia, an addendum, that went around the entirety of the building of the Mikdash. In other words, as we'll see in just a moment, the walls of the... So it's a dramatic lesson. The walls of the Beis HaMikdash were built in such a way so that there were storage chambers built into the walls on three sides of the Beis HaMikdash. Right, so basically, in other words, the outer wall of the Beis HaMikdash was not simply just, you know, like a foot thick or something like that. It was considerably thick, so that running around the exterior of the Beis HaMikdash, there were chambers that surrounded the Beis HaMikdash where they stored items. We'll talk about as we go on in the Navi how they access these chambers. But running around the Yotzia means an added area, an area which was there in the Beis HaMikdash above and beyond the interior area. This Yotzia ran around three sides of the Beis HaMikdash. Vayask Tzlaos Saviv, and he made literally ribs around the Beis HaMikdash. And Sela means something on the side, right? The rib is considered to be on the side of the spine. So in that same sense, running around the Beis HaMikdash, he made side chambers, which would be for storage. How did he make these chambers? So Pasuk Vav, Hayotzia hatachtona chamesh bo amar rachba, batichona sheish bo amar rachba, vashlishis sheva bo amar rachba. So basically he writes, says the Navi, there were three levels of chambers that surrounded the walls of the Beis HaMikdash on three sides. Right? There were three levels. We'll talk about, again, how you access from one level to the next. But says the Pasuk, the three levels were built in a very, very interesting way. Normally speaking, if you were going to build a three-story house, so how would you do it? You would probably build let's say you were building it out of stone. You would build the stone straight up, then you would drill holes into the stone, and then you would insert floorboards. You know, think about building a bookcase. I don't know if you ever built a bookcase, but when you're inserting the shelves into a bookcase, so the bookcase has various holes on the side. You insert little pegs into the holes on the side of the bookcase, and then the shelves rest on the pegs. Right. So similarly, normally speaking, if you were building a building, the walls would go straight up. You would drill holes into the sides of the stone. We'll get to that in a minute. And then you would insert the floorboards somehow into the holes. They would be kept in place with pegs or something like that, very strong pegs, obviously, that would hold the floorboards in place, but they would basically be anchored by being put into holes in the stone itself. Shlomo HaMelech, as we'll see in a moment, did not want to do that. He did not want to drill holes in the stone of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so how do you build a three-story building if you're not willing to drill stones in the, if you're not willing to drill holes in the actual stone? So says the Pasuk, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash in the following way. He built these chambers in the following way. The wall was made out of stone going all the way up, but the walls for the lower chamber were much thicker, and they thinned out as you got further and further up. So in other words, says the Pasuk, okay, we'll just read it back into the Pasuk, Hayotzia hatachtona, the lowest of these three levels, the lowest area where the chambers were, on the ground level, was only chamesh bo amor rachba. The width of the chamber was only five amos across, right? Which meant that the walls were very, very thick. Right, the walls were so thick that you could basically, there was a lot of room to be able to lay floorboards on top of the thickness of the walls, so that you didn't have to do any drilling into the sides of the walls. The walls themselves, like sometimes you have with, when you're building a sukkah, right? So if you have, you know, heavy, we have that over here actually, here in the shul. If you have heavy cement blocks that make up the wall, so, you know, you don't have to, when you put the schach up on top, you don't have to stick the schach into anything. The schach simply sits on the area, you know, because the cement blocks are so wide that there's plenty of room for the schach to sit on. See, here the walls were so thick, there was plenty of room for the floorboards. Then he went up to the next level. So the next level, the hatichona, tichona is the middle one. The middle of these three stories was shesh bo amarach, but it got a little bit wider, right? There was more room to expand the room itself, right? Because you didn't need as much support, right? So now there was still a pretty thick wall on either side, but the chamber itself was an amma wider, right? Probably half an amma in one direction, half an amma in the other direction. So there was still a lot of thickness, you know, the walls were still very thick. They put floorboards on top of the second story. Vashlishis, the third story, was Sheva Bo Amma Rachba. That was still a little bit wider. It was one Amma wider, again, probably half an Amma in each direction. So that way they were able to basically lay the floorboards that would, you know, for the third story and for the second story without having to drill any holes into the sides of the wall.
But what is the reason why he didn't?
Oh,
because,
yes.
Not because he didn't want to have any holes there, but because
it
would have made a lot of noise.
No, you want to use the utensils probably to make a hole.
And iron utensils. So he didn't want that to get some air.
Right, so we'll see that in just a minute. We'll see that in just a minute. Ki migraos nosan labayis soviv chutza. So explains the pasuk. Again, it's a difficult pasuk to translate. Migraos ligareya means to subtract, right? So says the pasuk, migraos nosan labayis soviv chutza. In order to do this, so Shlomo HaMelech basically had to gradually detract from the width of these chambers, right? He started off the top chamber with 7 amos wide, then 6 amos wide, then 5 amos wide as he came down to the bottom. He was gradually migareya, he gradually subtracted from the width of the rooms, livulti achoz bikiros haboyis, because he didn't want to, achoz in this case means to drill, he didn't want to drill into the walls of the house, of the Beis HaMikdash itself. So therefore he created the structure where the rooms would, as you got closer to the ground, the width of the rooms would gradually diminish in order to allow more wall area to be able to support the floorboards as you got closer to the ground. Right? If I had a blackboard, that would be very good at this point. Yeah. But I think you basically get it. Maybe on Shabbos we'll put up a diagram, you know. Okay. So why did he do all of this? So explain the Mefarshim. That's what this next pasuk is doing there. V'habayis b'hibono so, when the Beis HaMikdash was built, Evan Shlema Masa Nivna, it was built of whole stones that were quarried and they weren't touched after they were quarried. Umakovos v'hagarzen, hammers or chisels or kokli varzel or any iron tool, lo nishma babayis b'hibonoso, it wasn't heard when they were building the Beis HaMikdash. So basically, again, this
reminds you of war.
Right. So that's the Chazal of a very famous comment. Why didn't they use any iron utensils in building the Beis HaMikdash? Iron reminds us of a sword, right? Swords remind us of war. The Beis HaMikdash was a place of peace. You can't bring an instrument of war into a place of peace. And this is the pasuk. Chazal have a tradition, a very famous tradition, that basically they didn't do any cutting of the stones whatsoever with iron instruments. They used the shamir, right? The famous worm, the shamir, that they had, it was able to cut through the stones, you know, to cut the stones exactly the way they wanted them. Once they hewed out the stones using the shamir to the dimensions they wanted it, they didn't touch the stones afterwards, right? So why is this pasuk here? So now that we did the previous pasuk, we understand the sequence.
They did all the work before they brought it.
Right. And specifically, the reason that Shlomo HaMelech had to build the Beis HaMikdash in the way in which he did, in other words, that he built these chambers in such a way so that you wouldn't have to drill any holes, was because they didn't want to drill any holes into the stone. Once the stone was quarried by the shamir, they didn't want to touch it. It was basically left the way it was, so all that they could do was to lay floorboards on top of it without actually disturbing the stone itself. Says the Pasuk Ches, Pesach HaTzela HaTichona, El Kesef Habayis Hayimonis. One entered the middle chamber on the southern side of the Beis HaMikdash. And how do we translate all of this? So Hayimonis, Yomin of course means right, right? Now in Biblical Hebrew, Yomin means south, right? Why is that? Well, so if your orientation is towards the east, which again nowadays when we have maps, the orientation is towards the north, that's up. Right, but traditionally, and this you actually see, they have maps from even the medieval period, where the compass is, you know, up is east. Right, the orientation of the map is towards the east. So if you look towards the east, right, so south is to your right. So whenever you find Yomin in Lashon HaTanach, it always refers to the south. Right, so El Kesef Habayis HaYomonis, on the southern side of the Beis HaMikdash, was the Pesach, the opening to the Tzela HaTichona, to the middle chamber. And Mefarshim have a hard time with this pasuk, because in the previous pasuk, in Vav, the word Tichona, middle, was a reference to the second story. Right? We spoke about three stories of chambers that surrounded the Beis HaMikdash. We spoke about the Yotzia HaTachtona, the HaTichona, the HaShlishis. Right? So Tichona, in that context, middle, meant the second story out of the three stories. So it's a very bizarre thing. What do you mean the entrance brought you into the second story? I mean, you know, it's not like a modern building, you know, where they have three floors on the ground and you come in on the fourth floor, right? You came in on the ground floor, presumably. So that's Mefarshim explained that there were a whole series of different chambers. You came in the middle chamber on the ground floor. Right? So you're coming in the middle, not the middle floor, but the middle chamber in the ground floor. But in any case, the entrance into the system of chambers was on the southern side of the Beis HaMikdash, right? Uvilulim, and through a spiral staircase, Ya'alu al HaTichona, they would go up to the second story, Umin HaTichona el HaShlishim, and the spiral staircase took you up as well from the second staircase, from the second story into the third story. So again, let's just stop for a moment, try to get a picture of what this looks like. So basically, what the pasuk is telling us is that there was a service entrance into the Beis HaMikdash, right? There was the main entrance that you came into the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, when the Kohen Gadol came in on Yom Kippur, so he went in the front. He went in into the Ulam, into the antechamber, then into the Heichal, right, which was the Kodesh, then into the Kodesh HaKodashim, which was beyond that. But there were all these chambers that were built into the wall running around three sides of the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously not on the main entrance of the Beis HaMikdash, but all around the other three sides of the building, there were all these storage areas. Now, how do you get to the storage areas? Well, if the only way to get to the storage areas is to go in through the Kodesh HaKodashim, so that's not a plan, right? I mean, it's not a very smart way to build a building. If the Kodesh HaKodashim, where you go, you know, the Kohen Gadol can go once a year on Yom Kippur, that's the only way to access, you know, the storage areas in the Beis HaMikdash. Not a very good idea, right? So it was a separate service entrance. The separate service entrance was on the southern side of the building. And basically you came in on the south, in the middle of the building. There was a spiral staircase that took you up to the second and third floors. And basically, if you wanted to get, let's say you wanted to get to a chamber on the northern side of the building, you would have to come in on the southern side
and
go around. Right? In other words, there was no access point on the northern side of the building. The southern side was the only way you could access all of these storage areas that ran around the periphery of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? And it was beautiful also. It got a spiral staircase. I mean, you think about all these wedding halls, you know, where people get married with the beautiful spiral staircase. That was the service entrance in the Beis HaMikdash.
It was inside?
Right? It was inside. Right, inside. Right? So, again, just to give us a sense, the place, you know, the actual main part of the Beis HaMikdash, the Ulam, the Heichal, they were not multi-storied, right? I mean, when you came in, it must have been very impressive, right? It was 60 amos from floor to ceiling, right? Yeah, 30 amos, rather. 30 amos from floor to ceiling. Again, figure when you came into the main base, you know, the main area of the Beis HaMikdash, it was 60 feet from floor to ceiling. So you're talking about walking in and having, you know, you're walking into this six-story building, and it's open all the way up. Right? I mean, so it must have been a very, very impressive effect. I mean, imagine walking into the Amalgamated and not having stories, but just having, you know, one, you know, the right, one floor, basically. Very, very impressive. right? And then running around the periphery of the Beis HaMikdash, there it was divided up into three floors. The three floors, as we'll see in a moment, only reached up in total 15 amos from the ground to the top of these three areas. So in other words, these storage areas ran up only the height of half of the Beis HaMikdash, right? The other half, right, the other 15 amos, the other 30 feet, let's say, from the middle to the top, those were where the chalone shkufim atumim were. The wind, right, it doesn't make sense to put the windows in the storage areas, right? The windows were at the top of the Beis HaMikdash. Again, you know, you have to imagine it, right? So as you walk in, and way up there, on like the fourth floor, are these windows, right? You know, it must have been a very beautiful effect, right? So, you know, the storage areas only ran around the periphery of about, you know, the bottom half of the Beis HaMikdash. The upper half of the Beis HaMikdash did not have storage areas running around it. That was simply open, you know, with these windows, chalon shkufim atumim, you know, on the upper half of the, you know, the actual Beis HaMikdash.
Who designed it?
It was like God. It's pretty good.
I wonder how we do with the third one.
Yeah, so there's actually their whole psukim in Yechezkel where they talk about the design. Yeah.
So.
And the truth is, it's a real thing because the plans were revealed to David HaMelech even before Shlomo. The plans were revealed to David HaMelech and they weren't allowed to deviate from the plans. So it was a nevuah that was given to David HaMelech.
They were able to do it. I mean, they had engineers and decorators. And
yeah. I mean, they did a good job. Right. Vayivres Habayis Vayichaleu Pasuk Tes. Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. He completed it. Vayispon Es Habayis Gevim. The roof of the Beis HaMikdash was covered over with Gevim, with some kind of attractive pattern. Usteros Bo'arazim. And it was the ceilings, you know, in these various chambers around, the ceilings were reinforced with cedar wood. Again, cedar wood was very, very hard. So even with people, you know, constantly walking on top of these ceilings, you know, people walking on the second story floor, which was the ceiling for the first story, nonetheless, the roof didn't give way because he reinforced it with very, very heavy cedar wood. So again, as we said, these chambers that ran around the Beis HaMikdash were 15 amos high. So again, as we indicated a moment ago, it was half of the height of the Beis HaMikdash. Vayechozes Habayis Ba'atzei Arozim, and the whole Beis HaMikdash, which was stone, was covered over and paneled with cedar wood. Right? So the effect was a gorgeous, gorgeous effect. Okay, so now we just finished at least that part of the Haftarah, which is concerned with the architectural details of the Beis HaMikdash. And here, the flow is interrupted for a moment for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give a message to Shlomo HaMelech. Vayhi Dvar Hashem al Shlomo Lemor. The word of God came to Shlomo HaMelech saying, Habayis Hazeh Asher Atov Vona, this house which you're building, Im Telech B'chukosai V'es Mishpotai Taseh V'shomarta Es Kol Mitzvosai L'leches Bohem, if you're going to walk in my statutes and follow my laws and guard all of my mitzvahs to walk in them, so then V'akimosi Es Devori Itoch, then I will promote my word, I will keep my word that I gave to you, that which I said to David HaMelech, i.e. that I will stay within the Jewish people, namely that I will dwell among Klal Yisrael, and I will not abandon my nation Klal Yisrael. The Barbanel over here asks a question, which we don't fully appreciate the question because this is where the Haftarah stops. But if we were to pick up the Navi itself, say for Malachim, and continue reading, basically, right after this, the narrative picks up with the rest of the details of how exactly they built the Beis HaMikdash. We had a very small dosage of, you know, architectural digest, you know, i.e., you know, the architecture that went into the Beis HaMikdash. We had a very small dosage of it, a couple of psukim. Then we have this nevuah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Shlomo. You'd better follow my mitzvos if you want this Beis HaMikdash to stay intact. You'd better follow my mitzvahs. Otherwise, as we know, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. And then, basically, from that point, the narrative picks up in Sefer Melachim the rest of the architectural details as to how they built the Beis HaMikdash, about a chapter and a half worth of architectural details. Ask me about Benel, what's this, you know, nevuah doing smack in the middle? Right? If you're going to give a nevuah to Shlomo HaMelech about how the Beis HaMikdash is only going to stay intact if the Jewish people keep the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then that should have been either at the beginning or at the end. To kind of throw it in smack in the middle seems out of place.
Maybe because the description is that the Beis HaMikdash was so strong and built so intact,
right,
that you would think that whatever will happen,
come what
the
may,
edifice will,
right,
stay.
Right.
So this is why that...
Right. So that's essentially what the Abarbanel answers. Says the Abarbanel, you might be really impressed when you read the couple of psukim that we just read now. I mean, again, you know, as was said here, you know, this was a magnificent work of architecture. Right? I mean, it must have looked stunning and dazzling. Right? It was so beautifully constructed between the way the stone was put together and the cedar wood was put together and the way it was so functional, utilitarian. I mean, it was a building to be proud of. So basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to convey the message to Shlomo HaMelech, this is a beautiful building. You're right. It's a beautiful building. But it's a King Solomon, right? But God, so God wanted to convey the message to King Solomon, to Shlomo HaMelech, this is a beautiful building, but it's only going to stay intact if you listen to the mitzvahs of Hashem. In other words, don't think, as beautiful as it is, don't think that this is an edifice that's going to last forever. Its beauty only lies ultimately in the fact that the Jewish people are doing God's will. If the Jewish people are not doing God's will, so all it is just a beautiful building. And it doesn't have any inner content whatsoever if the Jewish people are not going to be faithful to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if they're not going to be faithful to the will of God. Right? That's what the Abarbanel says, these psukim, these verses are put into a context. We mentioned at the outset that this Haftarah clearly reflects, in a certain sense, the theme in the Sedra. The theme in the Sedra is all about the building of the Beis of the Mishkan, and here the Haftarah is talking about the building of the Beis HaMikdash. But what's also striking, and this the more recent commentators on the Haftarah pick up on this, what's also very striking is the contrast between the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. One contrast, one very glaring contrast, is just simply the scale. Right? I mean, the Mishkan was also, you know, an impressive edifice, but certainly it's small, it pales in comparison just in terms of the scale on which it was built with the massive building which we're talking about and the permanence of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? The Mishkan, as beautiful and as wonderful as it was, it was a smaller version of the Beis HaMikdash.
The Mishkan
was portable.
But the Mishkan was built for a temporary.
Yeah, we're not knocking the Mishkan. We're not knocking the Mishkan. We're just pointing out that there is a striking difference. What's also striking in this, Mendel Hirsch, Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch's son, calls our attention to Rav Yisachar Yaakovson, the author of a sefer called Chazon HaMikra, mentioned last week, my own Mashkiach, Rav Avraham Rivlin. They all call our attention to the fact that there's another striking difference between the building of the Mishkan and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The building of the Mishkan, the focus is always on medieval slave. People voluntarily giving things to the Mishkan. Right? Truma. Truma means something that you give of your own free volition, of your own free will. Right? Anyone who wants to, right at the beginning of the parasha, anyone who wants to come and donate to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan rather. Right? As they say in the contemporary philanthropic parlance, we have donating opportunities, right? That was the Mishkan. Fast forward 400 plus years to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, there are no donations anymore. Shlomo HaMelech puts together a workforce, you get drafted, and we have 30,000 people plus another 70, plus another 80,000 people who are basically pressed into service to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Nedivah slave, the generosity kind of went out the window. Now it's buddies, you know, Rabbi, you better ante up, you know, we want you, you know, to come and report for duty in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the whole system altogether is much more complicated. There's the temple, the holy temple in Jerusalem.
The holy temple where they sacrificed the animals?
Right, yeah, oh. Right, yeah. So, and the whole infrastructure is much more complicated. Right? The Haftarah starts out describing a political treaty which was necessary in order to ensure ultimately that the temple, that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be built. Right? In other words, a major part of this temple getting up and off the ground was the peace treaty that Shlomo HaMelech had with a foreign king, with Hiram, the king of Lebanon, which enabled him to be able to get the workers from Lebanon and to be able to get the cedar wood from Lebanon. And it sounds like, again, you know, through natural means, but Derech HaTeva, had that peace treaty not been in place, the Beis HaMikdash wouldn't have been built as easily. It would have been built, certainly. It was God's will that it was going to be built. But in a natural fashion, it owed a lot to Hiram and his participation up in Lebanon. That's a far cry from anything with the Mishkan, you know, to build the Mishkan. They didn't need to enter into peace treaties, into negotiations. This is a whole political, social, financial process, you know, a whole campaign, essentially, which is put together in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. By contrast, we would say that the building of the Mishkan was a much more, quote-unquote, Hamisha affair. It's a Hamisha affair. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu went out one day, he said, Rabbeisai, we need donations for the Mishkan. Okay, so no. So people brought, they had a little bit of this, they had a little bit of that. They brought it over. Hamish, very kind of homey, you know, a very, 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 very kind of simple, non-complicated, very, you know, basic way of creating this Mishkan. So how are we to interpret this contrast? So I, you know, on one level, you can say, look, if the Mishkan was able to provide the Hashras HaShchina, the notion that God's presence dwelled in the Jewish people, and was able to do so with a much more low-frills kind of operation, who needs the expansive kind of operation which Shlomo HaMelech assembled in putting together the Beis HaMikdash?
That's what kings do. They draft people, tax people.
So you might say, so basically your perspective is, I think, so why was all this necessary? I mean, if you could have built a Mishkan, and you could have done it that way, why was it necessary to go through the pomp and circumstance of building the Beis HaMikdash?
You would think for a Beis HaMikdash, you would have only Jews building it. And not need the help of
Melech, a
foreign
king. Right, but that's essentially what was done, at least in parts of it, right? Not in the actual building, but in the preliminary process, right? You know, quarrying the stone and the like, they used these foreign workers to put it together. I can't help but be reminded, just on an autobiographical level, just when you think about the contrast between the Mishkan on the one hand, Beis HaMikdash on the other, what came to mind was two kiddushim which we made in the family for two of our daughters. Right. When our first daughter was born, we were living in Washington Heights. It was in the Kollel in YU. So, you know, like most people, when a daughter is born, you make a kiddush. Well, what's a kiddush? So Friday morning, I went to Grunbaum's Bakery. I bought three cakes, you know, a couple of pounds of cookies. We brought them back to the... we didn't have kichel either. I think, you know, you'll erase the tape afterwards when I write, when I tell over the story. But I don't think we had schnapps even.
No.
Yeah, okay, and we still live to tell the tale. So we got some cakes and some cookies, some sodas, whatever. We brought them back to the apartment. And, you know, I put up a sign, you know, we're having a kiddush after Shul Shabbat this morning. Anyone who wants to come up, they can come up to the apartment, you know, and have a bite of cake. Grunbaum's and bring up to the apartment and tell people they can come by after davening Shabbos morning. No chas v'shalom. We rented out the community room and we brought in a caterer and we had shalom.
Like
right. So when you think about these two experiences, so is one any less a celebration, any more a celebration than the other? No, of course it's the same degree of simcha.
Usually it's the other way around. You know that?
What do you mean?
Usually with your first daughter, you have this massive kiddush. And by the third, you have like a piece of leket that looks like it was like from 4 days old.
The leftover from the first kiddush.
It was where your kiddush was.
The circumstances.
Right. I won't inquire.
The circumstances changed.
But, right. So the Shiloh, is there anything wrong with that?
Sometimes you have to do something to impress others.
Right.
But you have no choice.
Right. So
it's not that you want it.
Right.
But circumstances are such that you have to impress the outside world.
Right.
Maybe the Beit HaMikdash was also that way. Once they were a nation on their own land, there was something like they had to impress the world.
Oh, right. So you could look at this somewhat cynically, right? You could say, look, if a Mishkan was good enough, who needs the big Beis HaMikdash with all the pomp and circumstance? But the truth is, you know, what Rebbetzin Heffler is bringing out is this, it's really necessary. If Klal Yisrael want to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could live in a, he could, his presence could dwell in Klal Yisrael in a tent, right, in a shack. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need a super deluxe Beis HaMikdash to bring his presence into Klal Yisrael. But if Klal Yisrael want to exert an influence on the rest of the world, so when they're in their own land, a Mishkan is simply not going to suffice. They're going to need something on this, on the level of a Beis HaMikdash. Right? So it's not that there's any criticism implied by the contrast between the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. As Klal Yisrael developed into a nation and developed the wherewithal to be able to influence the rest of the nations of the world, they needed something more elaborate in order to convey the message of God's presence to the rest of the world. The Mishkan wouldn't have cut it in Eretz Yisrael the way it did in the Midbar. But, and here's the message of the Haftarah, for us, we have to remember that even though it's necessary for us to have the kind of pomp and circumstance that's associated with a Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to a Mishkan, let's never think that the beauty and the greatness of the Beis HaMikdash lies in its external beauty. That's the conclusion over here. Ultimately, what we're looking for is in Telech B'chukosai V'smishpotai Taseh V'shomartes Kol Mitzvosai L'leches Kohen. Ultimately, it's the following of the mitzvahs which makes the Beis HaMikdash beautiful. The same thing that makes the kernel, that makes the Mishkan beautiful, is the same thing that makes the Beis HaMikdash beautiful. It's the notion that God rests his presence among the people of Israel. It may be necessary for us in communicating with the outside world to have a lot of polish and to make a beautiful edifice in order to convey that idea, but if we lose sight of the basic idea, which is the notion of God's presence in the Jewish people, so then the whole edifice with all of its beauty and splendor ultimately isn't worth anything. So we have to recognize the need for the splendor, but also that which makes the splendor important is the presence of God, the presence of the Shekhinah, which ultimately gives the splendor and the beauty of the Beis HaMikdash its meaning and its significance. The second temple was built...